The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Our guest this week is Adam Sherry. He is a specialist in estate planning, and the subject of conversation between him and Jim will be why you do not want to die without a will. And Jim, I'm sure a lot of people in many families have experienced a family member who, as they're aging, begin to lose some of their hearing, and they really need a hearing aid, you know? And you say, you know, so-and-so Uncle Bill, you need a hearing aid. Oh, no, I don't need a hearing aid. I'm just fine. Now, you sit over at Uncle Bill's house, and the TV's cranked up so hot, you know, your hair is blowing backwards as you're watching television, and he says he doesn't need a hearing aid. The problem is he's not thinking about the effect of his ideas upon other people that are there. And ironically, the same thing applies to wills. And you hear about it every year. You know, there's suddenly some celebrity that dies very quickly and unexpectedly. Paul Walker did. Now, I'm not talking about his will here, but for example, that happened. And we find out later they've left an estate mess or even without a will, especially people who have lots of money. And you wonder, why is this? This would be a simple thing to plan. I mean, when you look at it, we've got all kinds of people, Anna Nicole Smith, Frank Sinatra, Abraham Lincoln, and Pablo Picasso all died without a will, without a way of designating what happened to their estate. And some estates then, Jim, take on a life of their own. But the other thing that happens, people don't realize, is if you don't have this will and it's not filed properly, it all becomes public.
Yeah, I want to correct you there. Frank Sinatra had a will. It's online. We'll actually discuss Frank Sinatra's estate.
Okay, so what's the difference then?
If you die with a will, your estate goes through probate, so everything in your financial affairs becomes a matter of public record. So I'm going to go through a couple of famous wills. On my computer right now, I have Frank Sinatra's will. So imagine your financial affairs become subject to public scrutiny. You know, maybe you have some weird bequest, or, you know, you don't want the neighbors to know that you have, or maybe you have somebody in your family that lays a claim to what you have. And we're going to discuss some very famous cases here. When I first got in this business, John, in financial planning back in 1980, I got my CFP in 1981, and I was amazed of hearing about, back then, it was people like Groucho Marx, W.C. Fields, a lot of famous people. I go, you know, these people are famous. They're rich. They have a lot of money. They're supposedly smart. They should have smart lawyers, smart accountants, but that's not what you find out. We're going to discuss cases of billionaires, everyone from Leona Hemsley to Howard Hughes. A lot of these people, you would think, just because you're famous, just because you're a successful business person, doesn't mean you have a smart estate plan. And it's just absolutely amazing what you find out. And of course, recently, and well, I'll discuss this with my guest, Adam Sherry, is the rock star Prince died without a will. Now, it's estimated his fortune is estimated anywhere from $250 million to $300 million. And it can actually be much greater than that, John, because, for example, Michael Jackson's estate was valued somewhere around $250 million, $300 million when he died. But just last year, Sony bought Michael Jackson's music rights to his music library and what he owned of other artists for $700 million. So a lot of these people still continue, especially if you're a movie star, especially if you're a music star, your estate continues to generate revenues. I think Elvis Presley, if he was alive today, would be a multi-billionaire because his estate still generates millions and millions of dollars every single year.
Jim, Elvis isn't dead. Where did you ever hear that? Elvis is still alive. And
you've been reading the tabloids, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I'm sorry. I fell prey to it. I was in the line at the supermarket, and dang, there it went. So let's look at some of these estate battles, because these are really eye-opening. Pick one. Let's do it.
We're going to go through eight here that everybody will probably recognize the name. One, Gary Coldman. Now, he had a modest home with mortgage and royalties. And sometimes it doesn't take a large estate to spur a battle. And that was the case of Gary Coldman, the diminutive actor best known for his star turn on the 70s sitcom Different Strokes. Now, after years of being in the news mostly for health and legal problems, Coleman died in 2010. He was just 42. Then the battle began. According to an account on Forbes, Coleman had left three wills, the last of which a handwritten codicil bequeathing everything to his wife, Shannon Price. Now, everything was a home that was still carrying a mortgage, some occasional royalties from his acting career, and his ashes. The problem was Coleman and Price had divorced, even appearing on the show Divorce Court. Still, Price claimed they had a common law marriage. A judge disagreed, saying the marriage had ended. One of the stranger estate battles in Hollywood history ended with Coleman's former business partner, Gray, taking the spoils. So here's a case, wasn't a lot of money, and you would think that, okay, the closest next of kin would have been his ex-wife. They got divorced, but actually it was his business partner. Now, for those of you remember James Brown, the godfather of soul, he died of a heart attack at 73 in 2006. He left his estate to charities that seek to educate disadvantaged youths. Very admirable of him to do something like this. The directive was with his widow and Tommy Ray Heine, or his adult children. Now, according to Forbes, the widow may have not been technically married to Brown. She was married, in fact, to another when they got hitched, and there were questions about whether he was really the father of at least one of their nine children. In 2009, the South Carolina Attorney General announced that a settlement had been reached. The widow and the children would split half the money, with the rest going to charity. Alas, the deal did not pass court muster. This February of this year, a court ruled it violated Brown's will. For now, the estate sits in limbo, $50 million running up attorney fees.
What amazes me, Jim, is in watching the lifestyles of the rich and famous, number one, I wonder how they get themselves into such debt problems, because they've got more than they need to live on comfortably. But number two, it doesn't take a lot to create an estate plan and to keep it current. And they have the money to do this, to pay estate planners or attorneys, whatever's needed to do. Why don't they just take the time to do it? It would seem logical. And it creates misery upon family members that may be involved.
Yeah, it's really amazing, because most of these guys, and we're going to get to some famous people here now, some may not recognize, they have accountants. They make a lot of money. So you would think you would have an accountant. If you had a good accountant, the accountant might say, hey, you know, what do you have in the way of an estate plan? The next person I want to talk about is an artist, Thomas Kincaid. You used to see these a lot in some of the stores and the malls. He built his fortune by making people smile and feel good when they gazed upon his soothing country scenes. The painter of light is what he was known as, left a more complicated situation behind when he died in April of 2012 at age 54. Pinto, who became involved with Kincaid after his marriage broke up, claimed, this is his girlfriend, claimed she had two notes written by the artist directing that she receive his mansion as well as $10 million designated for a museum of his artwork. Kincaid's wife disputed the claim. Now, somehow, the women managed to avoid a long, drawn-out drama and reached a settlement before the end of 2012. Nobody knows what the details are, but the winner overall of the $66 million was Amy Pinto, a recent girlfriend.
Well, that's the problem with estate plans like this. It's like decision by indecision. If you don't have a will, there is an estate plan. The state in which you live gets to decide who gets your money. And part of that, of course, spools off to all the attorneys that are involved.
Oh, absolutely. Here in California, on $1 million, if you go through probate, the fees are close to 5%. Imagine paying close to $50,000. The next case I want to discuss is Jimi Hendrix, his estate. Now, remember, gosh, John, he died in the 70s, so $80 million back then was a lot of money. Now, this is going to blow your mind. His estate at his death in 1970 was worth $80 million. $80 million today, John, would be probably close to $1 billion. Not only did he rule the rock world, but he died at age 27, like many, like Janis Joplin and Jim Morrison. But multiple battles over his estate have left it in a haze to this very day. Here's a guy that died in 1970. His estate is still being disputed. He left everything in sort of a disassembled affair. His father, Al, who had served as his manager, battled record companies and other music industry entities for the rights to his songs and merchandising. Now, his father won out and everything was settled until his father died in 2002. Then the rancor began. The estate by then was worth $80 million. The bulk of it was left to Al's adopted daughter, Janie. Al's other son by Jim's mother, Leon, and Leon's children sued, saying Janie had influenced Al to leave them out of his last will. After a three-month trial, a judge ruled Janie had not actually influenced Al at all, and that Leon's history of drug use was a reason for Al and not to have trusted him with the assets, the winner, Leon, Jimmy's brother, and his children. Now, the next one, this always amazes me, is one of the heirs to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, John Seward Johnson. His estate was worth $400 million. The winners were a recent girlfriend and his third wife. And, you know, you would think, John, with a Johnson & Johnson fortune worth probably close to, overall for the family, billions of dollars, somebody worth $400 million would have had some kind of an estate plan, but that isn't necessarily the case. Now, this one is interesting. The next one is a guy by the name of J. Howard Marshall II. Marshall Fields, think of that. The losers in this case were John Howard Marshall III, the son, and his girlfriend, at one time girlfriend, Anna Nicole Smith. John Howard Marshall II probably wasn't a household name. He made most of his fortune in oil and investing in Coke Industries, but thanks to a wild, drawn-out lawsuit, which involved a former Playmate model, Anna Nicole Smith, his wife, and 62 years his junior, and his namesake son versus his stepson, he became well-known after his death in 1995. The battle over the estate boiled down to this. Smith and the namesake son were left out of the will, while the stepson was left with everything. After years of battle in the court, an aspect of the case reached the Supreme Court. Alas, Smith's efforts were rebuffed. Smith and J. Howard Marshall III have since died, but the U.S. Circuit Court still has not made a final ruling. So, John, here's an estate worth $1.6 billion and is still in litigation. Now, the next one is one everybody, I'm sure, remembers. And if you're young, you may not remember a very wealthy man by the name of Howard Hughes. He was rather eccentric. When he passed away, his estate was worth $2.5 billion. And he was famous for so many things. He was a pioneer in aviation. Remember, what is it, the Spruce Goose, John, that's in Los Angeles?
Right, that giant plywood aircraft.
Yeah, it was out of plywood. They actually got it to fly in the air. It didn't go very far. I'd never want to go anyplace in that plane like that. I mean, he was very famous for his affairs with movie stars like Jane Russell. He piloted TWA, and he had run-ins with U.S. senators, especially with McCarthy Commission. Now, he died in 1976, and no verified will was found. Now, the headlines kept growing bigger around his estate. There was a handwritten document found on the desk of a Mormon church official. That will left, among other bequests, $156 million to a guy by the name of Melvin Dumars, a gas station owner, whose account of giving Hughes a ride when he was stranded in the desert was used as the basis for the 1980 movie Melvin and Howard. It was another 3 years before the estate was settled by the courts, dividing the fortune. Now imagine this, $2.5 billion, dividing that fortune among 22 cousins. Now, let's skip the estate taxes. That'd be roughly about $100 million apiece. Not bad if you were a cousin. Gosh, I wish I could put my name in there. And in 1984, actress Terry Moore settled with the estate over her purported 1949 marriage to Hughes. She said the couple had never divorced. The sum she received was never disclosed. Now, we come to our dog story. Now, for those of you in New York, you're probably familiar with the name Leona Hemsley.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah.
she died, worth about $4 billion, the winners were two grandchildren in charities. The loser, in this case, was her pet Maltese dog. Now, she died in 2007, left most of her fortune to charity, but it was a relatively small bequest that got everyone talking. The trouble, Hemsley apparently named her Maltese dog as a recipient of $12 million. Now, that's one rich Maltese. She specifically left two of her grandchildren out of her will, saying they knew the reasons why no others only received money from a trust, only if they visited their grandfather's grave each calendar year. The public outcry was enormous, even bringing death threats against the poor dog. Trouble was the dog's name, whose annual security bill was said to reach $100,000. I mean, everybody wanted to kill off the dog. In the end, Trouble's inheritance was reduced to $2 million. That's still a rich dog. I mean, you can, well, maybe not. Yeah, I suppose on $2 million, I mean, you could have grass-fed beef for dinner every night. And a judge ruled and left out the grandkids, and the grandkids only got $6 million apiece. So the big losers here were the grandchildren and her dog, pet Maltese, Trouble.
And you know what, Jim, what really amazes me about all of this is that these people have money, they have fame, they have fortune, and when it comes to their will, they don't call me. I'm available, you know. Tell me what you want me to do.
That's one of the unique things about our company is we will become the heir of your estate if you have nobody to leave your
money
right.
to. We're professional heirs.
There you go. I wonder if you could probably get away with that. You probably could.
But some people, they have wills. Okay, so they leave wills behind, but then there are more complications. So it's not just the will. So let's name some of those.
I want to get some, but here's one that I found fascinating. Pablo Picasso died in 1973 at the age of 91, leaving behind a fortune and assets that included not only artwork, five homes, cash, gold, bonds, but because he died intestate, meaning he didn't have a will, it took 6 years to settle his estate at a cost of $30 million. And here, Michael Jackson, although a will was later discovered immediately following Michael Jackson's death in July of 2009, his mother filed court papers claiming that Jackson died intestate. Like Hendrix and Marley before him, Jackson's estate continues to generate money. In the year since his death, his estate generated $242 million, actually more than that, because last year Sony bought his music collection for $700 million. Now, here's one I found if you're a history buff, is Abraham Lincoln, the nation's 16th president, had the distinction of being the first president to be assassinated, as well as the first president to die intestate, never mind the fact that he was a lawyer himself. So even very famous people, John, and you know, here's a president, don't have an estate plan.
What's amazing to me is that these people, like I said before, are very wealthy. And then after they pass on because of the mess their estate is in, this stuff splattered all over the internet.
Oh, it is. Hold on a second. Let me just do a little Google search here. famous last wills and testament. Let me see. I've got four pages here. I've got Heath Ledger, James Gandolfini, George Steinbrenner. Oh, my goodness. He was a billionaire. Paul Newman, Babe Ruth, George Washington, our first president, Anna Nicole Smith, Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra. Okay, folks, let's just go into Frank Sinatra's will. Okay, he is stating here, I'm married to Barbara Sinatra, who in this will is referred to as my wife, and was formerly married to Nancy Barbado Sinatra, to Ava Gardner Sinatra, and Mia Farrow Sinatra, and each of said marriages were subsequently dissolved. I have three children, all of whom are the issue of my marriage to Nancy Barbato Sinatra, Nancy Sinatra Lambert, and Francis Wayne Sinatra, and Christine Sinatra. So he's naming all three of his kids. Nomination of executor, I nominate Elliot Weissman and Harvey Silbert to act as co-executors of this will. And if they don't not around, it's the City National Bank of Beverly Hills. I wonder if I still around. Let me see. Let's take a look at who he left his money to. Because as I recall, he was worth several hundred million. And like any recording artist, his estate continues to generate a lot of money. Okay, he's got specific bequests here. To my former wife, Nancy Barbato Sinatra. She survives me. He's going to give her $250,000. Dorothy Hilleman of North Hollywood, California, if she surmised me, she gets 50 grand. Alvina Jubert of Rancho Mirage, 50 grand. Jilly Rizzo gets $100,000. To my wife's son, Oliver Marks, he got 100 grand. Okay, to my daughter, Christina Sinatra, if she surmised me, the sum of $200,000. To my son, okay, so he gives each one of his kids $200,000. Okay, let me get down here. We get down to his wife, Barbara. She gets all my rights as license pursuant to that certain license agreement with Sheffield Enterprises, including my 25% royalty therein. So she got the royalties, master recording to his trilogy collection. So here we are looking at Frank Sinatra's will, and the one I want to look at next is Everybody Remembers Elvis Presley. And John, there's an estate that's generated probably close to $1 billion since he passed away. You know, it just amazes me. Here is the entire will that you and I are reading. We could take days, but I've got 4 or 5 web pages of famous people, and their wills are online. You can find out everything and what they did.
Well, I guess everybody's getting the idea by now that if you don't take care of your affairs before you pass on, it could be a big mess for everybody that you have left behind. And why they do it, okay, well, I don't care. And the important thing is you should do it. So that's where we're going with this.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a number of reasons that you want an estate plan. One, if you become incapacitated, you have an accident, you have a stroke, something happens. Secondly, probate fees. In California, it's close to 5% on the first million. Third, estate taxes. If you're over 5.5 million, you're going to face estate taxes of 40%. Costly settlement. Jimi Hendrix's estate is still in litigation. And just as we've been discussing here, public affairs. How would you like your public affairs to be discussed like I just did? I could have read Elvis Presley's will, Frank Sinatra. There's all kinds of famous people out there. And let me demonstrate a more recent one, because I'll be discussing this with my guest, Adam Sherry, next. It is estimated that Prince's estate will owe the federal government $100 million, which will have to be paid 9 months from the date of his death. And I'm just thinking off the top of my head, because we have several very, 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 very wealthy clients. And there are a number of things that could have been done that could have eliminated that $100 million. a foundation trust, a charitable remainder trust, an irrevocable life insurance trust, or a charitable lead trust, which pays income to a designated charity organization. The remainder passes to your heirs free of estate and income tax. Or we could do something called a defective grantor trust, which would also pass the assets on to the heirs. The important point we're trying to make here, John, is there's $100 million that's going to go to the government. And you know how well they spend your money. It'll probably get wasted. But there's $100 million that could have gone to a charity or done some good or made a difference in somebody's life. And here's $100 million that's going to go on out the door. And, you know, he had a good advisor. That $100 million in taxes could have been completely eliminated.
Okay, Jim, I don't think we're going to go through any more of these. So who needs an estate plan? I maintain everybody does. I don't care what your income level is, because it deals with what has to happen, especially if you have minor children, etc.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of reasons. Today, where you see second and third marriages, it's very important that you have a proper estate plan, especially if it's a second or third marriage. There's children from different marriages, different assets. Second, you have kids or grandchildren that have special needs that you want taken care of. A third reason would be, let's say you have various medical issues that you're dealing with either you or your spouse. Having a family business, this really gets complicated, especially if it's not a liquid family business where there could be estate taxes at death and the heirs don't have the liquidity to pay the taxes. The business basically gets disrupted and could actually go under. A fifth reason would be you have a large estate like Prince, $250 million, $100 million estate tax that could have been eliminated. A sixth reason, you want to make specific bequests. It could be a college, a charity, something that is special that you want to endow with your assets. Or number seven, you just have complicated financial affairs, whether it's a business you own, the assets you own. You know, think of these rock stars that have royalty income that comes in, or artists and things like that that can continue. I mean, Elvis and Frank Sinatra's estate continued to generate money into the future, as will Prince's estate. So, John, these are just a number of reasons why you want to have an estate plan. So I hope if you're listening to this, you haven't updated your estate plan. Your medical conditions have changed. Your wealth has changed. You've had a second marriage. You have children that have difficulties. You may be facing estate tax. Whatever the reason is, do yourself a favor. Get together. I know we don't like to think about our demise, but there's two things that are certain, death and taxes, and we all are going to face that. So do yourself a favor, get together with an estate planning attorney, and don't leave your estate in the mess as the cases we discussed on today's program of these very famous people. You would have thought they would have done better planning, but they didn't. The result is it's a matter of public record, costly expenses. The attorneys have gotten very wealthy on these estates. And, of course, it's now a matter of public record. I mean, you know, I could have read all kinds of wills. Imagine going into Frank Sinatra's will and reading everything about who he left, or Elvis, or anybody like that. Is that really the way you want your estate to be left to your heirs? Do yourself a favor. Take plans now and make this the year that you put a plan into effect that takes care of your loved ones, whether it's a spouse or your own children or even nieces and nephews.
And along this line, coming up next as our guest on the program today is Adam Sherry, specialist in estate planning. Why you do not want to die without a will. Coming up next as Lifetime Income continues at FinancialSense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized retirement portfolio.
Recently, everybody was shocked about the rock star's death, Prince, at an early age. But what was more shocking was Prince had no estate plan. Joining me as my special guest on the program today is Adam Sherry. He's an estate planning specialist from the firm of Anderson & Yoakum. And Adam, let's talk about probate, because that's what's going to happen with Prince's estate. Latest estimation, the value of his estate was anywhere between $250 million and $300 million. I want to talk about probate, but also the number of things that he could have done to save estate taxes, because his heirs are going to pay an estate tax of over $100 million. So let's begin with probate, because he didn't have an estate plan, which is really not true, because if you don't have an estate plan, you automatically get one. The state in which you live in or are domiciled creates an estate plan for you through the process of probate. So let's begin with probate, what it is, and why most people want to avoid it.
Yeah, absolutely. The state will provide you with an estate plan if you aren't proactive in establishing your own. So the probate process is the process by which the court supervises the transfer of the deceased person's assets. So let's just talk about Prince here. So the court is going to supervise the transfer of Prince's assets to either other individuals, other living individuals, or organizations. And so if a person has left a will, they didn't necessarily go to the length of establishing a trust, but let's say they left a will, then the court is going to still supervise that transfer. It's still going to be subject to probate. However, it'll be distributed to the persons identified in the will. Now, if there's no will, just like you said, the state is going to provide a distribution scheme, usually under their default laws, oftentimes found in the probate code. So that's going to be something where they identify individuals and they divide it among them, such as a surviving spouse and children.
Yeah, I guess according to the press, Prince had one full sister, five half-siblings, and he may have had an adult child, depending on a DNA test. So all of these things, the court has to deal with that. And a lot of times, the way the estate is distributed may be in a way that the original owner of the assets would not have liked or intended. And it just strikes me as unusual, because we've heard about cases like Anna Nicole Smith, Howard the billionaire, Howard Hughes. There was one of the heirs to the Johnson & Johnson fortune. Why do you think it is, Adam, in your experience? I mean, Prince was a brilliant singer, a brilliant businessman, and yet he had no estate plan. It's just hard to imagine somebody that is that talented, that smart. It just wasn't that he was a good entertainer, but he was also a sharp businessman, would not have an estate plan.
I couldn't agree more. So, you know, I don't think that it's for lack of intelligence or lack of drive or lack of motivation. Oftentimes, it comes down to the emotions that are associated with thinking about one's death or planning for one's death. You know, when we sit down with clients, oftentimes in our first meeting, we are forced to talk about unpleasant topics like our own mortality or the fact that we're going to leave people behind. And it also requires us to focus on some of the details regarding finances that are also kind of difficult to get our head around sometimes. So, you know, as far as I can tell, most of my clients are concerned about talking about their own mortality, and also they don't necessarily have their finances organized.
And you know what makes this a little bit more difficult today is where you see a lot of second and third marriages where you have separate assets that come into a marriage, separate children, separate needs for children. This can really get complicated unless you do proper planning.
These are some tough conversations that people are going to have. And so facing them is something that is really worth taking time to do while you're alive, because, you know, this whole topic really focuses us on the fact that nobody's going to be able to escape death. And if they don't take steps during life to identify the people to whom they want their assets to be distributed and, you know, take some proactive steps as far as establishing a trust, then the state, as you pointed out, is going to come up with a way to distribute those assets. Now, you identified all the potential people who might have an interest in Prince's estate. And so they are going to be proactively representing their own interests, potentially, you know, fighting to elbow out one person or another if it increases the share of their interest in the estate. And, you know, these sorts of things get really messy. They're really expensive. And oftentimes the first thing that's lost in this process is the wishes of the decedent. So by not facing those tough questions and dealing with the realization that, you know, Prince was going to pass away at some point, he lost the ability to determine who it is that receives his assets, which were sizable. And oftentimes, the people who are left behind are subject to claims from, you know, these more remote relatives who may have an interest. And that's one of the things that I oftentimes tell my clients, is that it really is kind of a gift that you are giving to the people who survive you. By making your intentions clear, you are avoiding the need for them to have to deal with these other people who may be making a claim.
Yeah, and what we're running into today, and I'm sure you see this in your practice, Adam, is in the case of second marriages that we see so often today, there may be, for example, special needs, or just in a straight marriage where, let's say, one of the children, like I'm dealing with a case right now where the daughter was married, was abandoned by her husband with children. She was basically a stay-at-home mom, and she did not have the skills to go out in the marketplace. And so, you know, my client wants to make special provisions to make sure that she's going to get a greater allotment of the estate and income because she's going to need it, where the other children of the marriage are doing quite fine. But if you don't have that spelled out specifically, either through will or trust, that's not going to happen. The courts don't see it that way.
Not at all. I mean, so we're talking about a specific situation that requires a non-standard division of assets. And those sorts of nuances just are not built into the state laws, and they are not equipped to deal with special situations like that. And, you know, those sorts of things are pretty easy to identify during life. So for some of your listeners, if they're sitting there right now thinking, it wouldn't necessarily work out best to have an equal division between all of my children, if they don't take a proactive step, something like that is going to happen.
What are the consequences in time? Probate is expensive because the fees are based on a percentage of the estate. So obviously, the larger the estate, the greater the fees. But Adam, also talk about the time. Now, in the case of Prince here, where we have one full sister, five half-siblings, and a possible adult child, depending on a DNA test, there are going to be six or seven different parties that are going to have a vested interest in the estate. So that means they're going to hire attorneys. This is going to go to court, and we know that this is going to take time because they're all going to be battling over a sizable fortune of $250 million, although $100 million of that is going to go to the government in the form of death taxes, which could have been avoided. We'll get to that in a moment. But talk about the time delays and the fees involved. So, for example, if I have an estate, I want to leave it to my children, they may need it. This is a process that can run years. In fact, you may know the case of Howard Hughes. Didn't that case go on for a decade or more?
Absolutely. And that's not abnormal, at least when it comes to large estates, because when that many people are interested and there's that many attorneys involved, each one is entitled to ask the court for, you know, an extension if necessary, for a sufficient amount of time to prepare their case. And so when all these different people are involved, it just increases the number of actors who could very well be extending it for one reason or another. Now, one of the big problems associated with this that may not necessarily always be associated with persons having very large estates, but it could be, but oftentimes is more relevant to other individuals of more moderate means, is that they may be leaving behind people who need access to that money. And so if they have to wait for the probate procedure, a court's going to have to get involved, a court hearing date is going to have to be set, they're going to be subject to a lot of the restrictions that all of our government entities deal with. So that's really going to slow them down. Now, you mentioned the expense. And so, you know, one of the good examples, and pardon me, just to go backwards a second, you hit it right on the head. The expenses associated with this are a percentage of the total estate. So, for example, in California, where we are right now, $1 million estate, let's say, would result in $46,000 in fees right now, according to the state set percentages.
Wow.
Now, half of that is going to go to the executor or individual who's supervising that, and the other half of it is going to go to an attorney. And I got to say, if someone has $1 million estate, it is highly unlikely that preparing an estate plan prior to death would even come close to that number. And, you know, as you said, that may represent a major windfall for the attorney who is potentially being paid much more than the amount of work that they're doing, since they're not being paid on an hourly rate here. So there's a certain savings aspect here to making sure that your estate is not subject to the fees that, I mean, as an attorney, I have to point this out. You know, these rates are set by attorneys who are making sure that it's included in legislation and the probate code. And so it's really no surprise that they end up being a pretty good deal for attorneys at times.
And so we've got the time, we've got the expense. In many cases, and I think this is just lack of proper knowledge, most couples, if they don't have an estate, let's say they're a young couple buying their first home, they usually buy the home with joint tenancies with the right of survivorship is how they take title to a property. And they think, okay, joint tenant, obviously, if the husband dies, it goes to the surviving spouse. You avoid probate. A lot of people think that property titling or using joint tenancy gets rid of the ultimate probate problem. It only does that on the first estate, but I have seen surviving spouses put their property and assets in joint tenancy with their children, thinking that this will avoid probate and it's cheaper than getting an estate plan. Adam, talk about all the problems that that creates, beginning with liability and also with possible gift taxes.
Yeah, those are two of the biggies when we're dealing with this sort of approach to planning for your eventual death and transferring your assets. So by doing that, you are actually giving a one-half interest to this other person that you're naming. So when it happens to be two spouses, you know, we'll talk in a second about some of the problems associated with that, then that's not necessarily such a big deal. But when you're dealing with a case like you identified of a parent and child, you are making a gift of an interest right then to that person. So that's going to need to be reported on your tax return. So let's say that you have a $500,000 house. That's a $250,000 gift that you just made to your child. So one, it's going to take away from your lifetime gift tax exemption amount. And two, you are making that gift now and you need to remember to report it on your taxes. So that's one aspect. But now that your child is a one-half owner of the place where you go to sleep every night, that asset is also potentially liable if they were to get into, let's say, an accident and were to be sued by somebody that they had harmed. Well, one of the assets that that person is going to be able to go after include the house that you're living in that you just transferred an ownership interest in to your child. So while you had been focused on, you know, making sure that it had transferred in the future, you've exposed yourself to a real danger in the present. You know, and then one other benefit that a person misses out on is that there's no step up in the underlying basis of the real property. So if the parent were to hold it until they passed away, and then it gets transferred to their child following their death, there would be no tax due from a capital gains perspective if a sale were to occur after that individual's death. But in the case of a transfer during life, so only one half of that interest, the one half retained by the parent, is going to get that step up in basis upon that person's death when it's transferred to their child. And, you know, that can represent a real significant loss as far as taxes are concerned.
Let's talk about how to avoid this, because we've talked about not only the fees, the cost, the fact that you have no control over your estate, because basically the state that you're domiciled in comes in and directs. Now, for example, in case of Prince, the state in which he's domiciled in, that state is going to determine who's the ultimate beneficiary, his sister, his five half-siblings, and a possible adult child. But how you can avoid this, and let's talk about trust, because not only do trust avoid probate, all the fees associated with it, but it gives you more control over things like probate, incapacity, and also if you have a large enough estate over, let's say, $5.5 million, possible ways to save estate taxes. Because I was reading in a state review that basically the $100 million that Prince's estate will face could have been eliminated.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning of our conversation today, we identified probate as the process by which a court supervises the transfer of assets from a deceased person to other living persons or organizations. So by establishing a trust during an individual's life, you are transferring your ownership to this trust, and that trust is going to live on after you pass away. So the necessity of the court supervising that transfer of assets from you to other persons is no longer necessary, because during your life, it's as if you took those assets and put it into a basket, which we'll think of as the trust, that is going to survive you. So during your life, you're able to maintain significant, if not total, control over those assets. However, you do it in a capacity, kind of like being the president of an organization. However, in this case, you're the trustee of your trust. Now, when the president of an organization passes away, that organization doesn't seek to exist. Instead, it continues to exist, and a new president is put into that place. The same thing happens with your trust. So you as an individual established it during your life. You acted as the trustee. But at the point that you pass away, that office of the trustee is vacant, and the person who you identified during your lifetime steps into your role as trustee. So at no point was it necessary to transfer the assets from you to this next trustee or to the people who are ultimately going to receive it, because you already did that during your life. And so, you know, that's the key step that enables a person to avoid probate. So what sorts of trusts will enable a person to avoid probate in this sense? A funded trust, right? So this is really important.
The reason that we're seeing this on the news is the fact that if his assets were held in the trust, we wouldn't have known who his beneficiaries were. We would have probably not known the size of his estate. All the public information you've seen come out in the media over the last month, all of that is because of probate and not having an estate plan. Had he had a trust, we wouldn't know any of this.
Not at all. You know, the public nature of probate is one of the big reasons to avoid it. Even if you don't have the same high profile as Prince, your information regarding your estate will be made available to the public through court records if your estate ends up being subject to probate following your death. So, you know, you mentioned all these different high-profile people at the top of the show, and you know, we collectively as a society know all sorts of information about their finances, about their lives, who their heirs were, and we wouldn't be privy to much or any of that if they had a proper estate plan in place prior to death.
And so now let's go back to Prince's estate, because reading an estate review, there's a number of things that he could do. There were a variety of trusts: a foundation trust, a charitable remainder trust, a irrevocable life insurance trust, a charitable lead trust, an intentionally defective grantor trust. In other words, this $100 million, which is going to go to the government, could have been avoided. And I think, Adam, there's this misperception by a lot of people that, oh, I take ownership to a piece of property with joint tenancy, I'll always avoid probate. Or, gosh, I'm not Larry Lotsabucks, so I don't have gazillion dollars, so I don't need an estate plan. And they don't understand the things of incapacity that we see happen oftentimes between a couple, special needs for children, and not to mention the ease of which an estate can be carried on. For example, let's take a husband and wife. A husband gets very sick, can't handle the finances. The wife has to take over. Rather than going through in a court and have the court administer something under incapacity, the wife could carry on the affairs as if nothing happened, just like, as you mentioned, in a corporation.
That's such a great point, because oftentimes we get focused on death and death only. But, you know, having older parents who are experiencing dementia, knowing people who have gone through just a terrible accident and lose the ability to continue to manage their own affairs, those are things that we also need to be thinking about, because they're real possibilities. And so by having a trust in place and some of the documents that are associated with it, you can make sure that you identify the person that you would like to handle your affairs while you're still living but unable to handle them. And you can also give certain instructions as to what you would like them to do with those assets and how it is that you'd like them to carry on your affairs. And, you know, one of the encouraging things is, I know that sounds intimidating to a lot of people to give up that sort of control, but one of the encouraging things is that by doing this, you know, this is going to go into action when you lose capacity. So when you have that car accident, but when you regain capacity to deal with your own business, you step back into that position, and the person who you identified no longer has the power to do those sorts of things on your behalf. So really, it serves you to identify these people and then to also give instructions regarding how you'd like your affairs to be managed while you lack the ability to handle them yourself.
And would you say, Adam, when you're in a situation, for example, let's say a second marriage where there's children from the previous marriage, both spouses have children from a previous marriage, sizable assets, special needs for a particular child, or special bequests that, let's say, an owner would like, a favorite charity or something like that, or the estate is large enough to be subject to estate taxes, or even worse, a family-owned business that may not be liquid, why it's more important to have an estate plan, as much as it may be discomforting to talk about our own demise.
Yeah, you identified so many important points there. And so before I move on to talk about that, I kind of want to focus on the fact that you touched on things that are relevant not only to a conversation that you might have with an estate planning attorney, but, you know, these touch on all different aspects of your life. So this is something where you should be involving a financial planner if you work with one, you know, a potentially your CPA, because this touches on so many different areas of our lives. And that's why it's so important that we're proactive about this, because just like you wouldn't let the government come in and make some sort of decision regarding how to manage your business or to whom you'd like to give a charitable donation at the end of the year, neither do you necessarily want to do that at the point that you pass away. So by taking the time to establish your estate plan, you're making sure that the wishes that you were able to carry out during life are continued after your death. Because if you're not able to do that, you know, you identified a potential issue where there is a blended family. And oftentimes in blended families, as a lot of your listeners may be aware, there may be competing interests in that everybody isn't necessarily interested in making sure that the estate is, you know, divided equitably or goes to the person with special needs who might need it most. And so by stepping in and laying out exactly what you want to happen with that estate that you've worked so hard to build over the years, or that business that you put so much time into, you're making sure that it's not the person who fights the hardest, or it's not the person who is able to hire the best lawyer. Instead, you're able to identify a distribution plan or pick that person who you know needs the most support and ensure that you're able to use your assets to continue to benefit those people after you pass away.
What would you say, Adam, as we sum up here, if we have listeners that are out there, maybe it's a blended family, it's a second marriage, they have children that have special needs, or it's a family-run business that could be a sizable asset that's not liquid, or an estate large enough to be subject to estate taxes, or just things in general with health issues, what would you say to them to encourage them to find somebody that's qualified and sit down and put an estate plan in effect? Like, we started this conversation with a very, very successful entertainer and a very successful businessman. But today, his estate will go on with $100 million going to taxes that could have all been avoided. There will be various competing efforts by various heirs and siblings who will hire their own attorneys that are going to keep this estate open for years, squabbling and fighting over the assets of the estate, which will shrink the estate even further.
You know, we spend time every day working to build that business, provide for our family, you know, perpetuate these goals that we have. And it makes no sense not to recognize the fact that, you know, we're going to pass away and we are going to leave assets behind. And so it really is in everyone's best interest, including the people who are going to survive you, to make sure that you take the time to lay out that plan. Now, one of the things that I want to point out that maybe some of your listeners aren't considering is that you're going to be handing a lot of this work off to the attorney that you're meeting with. So really, it's a matter, I guess I kind of want to give them a little sneak peek into what the process is going to look like. It's really going to be a conversation in many ways. You're going to sit down with that person. You're going to let them know what you really value, what you want to happen after you pass away. And then that person is going to offer some suggestions as to ways in which you can achieve those goals after you pass away. And so, you know, just like you wouldn't necessarily sit back and just say, well, tax me on whatever came in this year, you know, you'd meet with a CPA and look at the different ways that you could achieve different types of deductions to make sure that you only paid the correct amount of tax instead of overpaying tax. In the same way, it's worth your listeners' time to take that time to meet with an attorney and have this conversation, and then know that you don't have to keep on kind of advancing the ball from that point. You're going to have somebody working with you whose job it is to take the information that you've given them and turn it into a legal document and an estate plan that's going to achieve those goals after they pass away, or in the case that they lose capacity.
Those are some very good points. And hopefully, if you're listening to this broadcast, you know, at least a couple times a year, we hear about the passing of a very famous entertainer, a successful businessman, or somebody that has notoriety. And we hear about all of this because they don't have an estate plan. So all of this information becomes public. Hopefully, by listening to this show, you listening will take some action. If you are in a situation where your estate is not well thought out or well planned, or you have a situation where you have maybe special children that have needs, you have a family-owned business, there are a number of reasons why you want to sit down and take this seriously. Adam, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow you or seek out your advice, tell them how they can do so.
The best place to do that would probably be to go through the internet, AndersonYoakum.com. That's Anderson, YOCUM.com. My contact is all there.
Well, listen, Adam, thanks as always for joining me on the program. Great advice, and hopefully we've motivated our listeners out there, if they don't have an estate plan, to take some action. All the best to you, sir, and come back and talk to us again.
I'd be happy to. Thanks, Jim.
Well, Jim, to reiterate what we've been talking about today, especially all the famous people that died either intestate or they died even with a will but didn't tie together all of the details of what they wanted done after their demise and the problems it's created for family members, not to mention legal battles, this is another indication of why everybody really needs to have a will. And simple wills, at least just a basic will, is not hard to do.
No, it's not hard to do, and if you have any of the issues we talked about, incapacity, you want to avoid probate, taxes, costly settlement, or you just want to keep your affairs private. I mean, Frank Sinatra had a will, but he didn't have the trust to keep it private, so there it was. We were reading his will on this program, and there's many other famous people I could have read as well. Don't leave yourself in that kind of situation. Well, in the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Hopefully, we've motivated you to take some action. But until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.